Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit toyotaonnicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington. Home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
On Breadbox Media, this is Chuck Coughlin. Welcome back. I'm going to do something a bit different today than the usual historical apologetics and uncovering some to the grandeur and magnificence of the achievements of our beloved Catholic Church. I'm going to talk about the sad subject and the quandary that Catholics are in today with a scandal, the child abuse scandal going on in the Catholic Church. And particularly in this podcast, I want to consider people's reaction to the scandal, especially Catholics' reaction to the scandal. I hear about so many people that are considering leaving the church, and some have. Just from one layman to another, I want to offer my amateur's word of advice and caution, extreme caution. First of all, I want to say that there's no excusing. We must condemn the perpetrators of this abuse, especially those in the clergy. There's no question of that. I'm not defending that. These perpetrators represent only a small minority of the church. The church has always been people with sinners. We're all sinners. I want to talk to those people, though, who would leave the church, because there's quite a bit to say on the subject, and I'll keep it brief as I can. We could make a book out of this. It's so deep. A deeper subject than most of the people I know realize. And because it's my specialty, I'm going to offer some historical perspective on this issue. How did we get to this point? Has it always been this way? Or is this a particular momentary abyss that we've fallen into? That's important to know. So let's start with this consideration. Let's slow down a bit. Don't do anything precipitous. Consider a few thoughts I have to offer. This is a subject that is so rich in detail that only a substantial book can do it justice. So this is a brief sketch. But I'm going to touch on some profound and deep things, so listen carefully. I want to say to you, those who would leave, don't leave. And I want to say something a little more direct. Don't compound one sin by committing another. Consider that, in a way, our souls are our children. Ideally, our souls and our children live on after our deaths. So we deny ourselves and plan ahead for our children so that their future life will be improved at our expense. To subtract from their lives to add to ours is to love less than we should, to endanger our children's lives by indulging ourselves. Would be worse than wrong, it would be a kind of abuse. To do that to our child is maltreatment. To do that to our soul is a kind of spiritual abuse. Those that leave the Catholic Church because of the sex scandal were never in the authentic Catholic Church to begin with, not the real Catholic Church. They were members of an imagined, inauthentic version of the Church, which was invented, or perhaps they invented, or perhaps absorbed it from the foggy atmosphere of the Enlightenment view, the osmotic pressure of darkness that is a constant obscuring of the divine light. We call the 18th century the Enlightenment. But it was a period when we but it was a period in which we enthroned reason above all. We could call the 12th century the age of illumination, when faith and reason were joined, were married, were complementary and cross-fertilizing. Faith and reason were joined and married in our fallen world. It is a view that omits the real transcendental church, if it is a strictly rational view. So those that leave the church because priests proved to be like us all, sinners striving in a fallen world. Is a mistake. It's very clear that Christ wanted us to attend church, that he wanted us to take his sacraments. The church is not the imperfect priests. The church is the sacraments through which they are channeled. Bad priests and good priests are the channel, an authentic channel to forgive sins, to transubstantiate bread and wine into the body and blood of Christ, which we eat and drink or die. Because if we don't, there is no life in us. Christ said it himself. But to mistake the priest for the church is to see the church as a kind of club, a club of great charity and achievement, but still a club, and therefore not really essential. You could live without it, right? No, not at all. That misconception that you could live without it is worse than wrong. Far worse. Leaving is committing suicide. Leaving is the suicide of our soul, our child. When you talk about child abuse, what about the soul as our child? Would we abuse that child? That will live on after us? That our whole life is a preparation for the life of that soul that is you, the real you. Once outside the church, those that leave lose access to the essential sacraments, which are valid gifts from God, even when conveyed through the instrument of a bad priest. How bad? Well, a really sinful priest, like the one depicted in Graham Greene's The Power and Glory, The Power and the Glory, that great novel, one of the 100 great novels of the last century. In that novel, this very bad and sinful priest still has the God-granted power to forgive sins, to transubstantiate earthly stuff into the bodily fluids of Jesus Christ, and into the real flesh of Jesus Christ. Maybe you haven't read The Power and the Glory or seen the movie starring Henry Fonda. I think it's called something else, Traitor, I think. No, The Fugitive, that's what it's called. They changed the name, but they shouldn't have, because The Power and Glory is there in this one priest. Because in the province in Mexico where he lived, all Catholics were to be gotten rid of, to be killed. Many of them hung. 60,000 died. This was probably inspired by the Calles government in the 20s, the Marxist government. They conducted a war against the Catholic Church, and they were killing all the priests. There were half a dozen that escaped. They escaped across the border in the United States. The rest, they hung. And they hung Catholics, and they took over the schools, the first thing they did, because that's where the action is. They always take over the young. It's what's happened to us. There are those who plotted to take over our young and have, and I'll talk about that more. But in The Power and Glory, this one priest is a fugitive, and he goes from village to village. And those villagers know he's a priest, but they won't turn him in. And there's a lieutenant in charge of a platoon of men who ride about trying to find him because they want to kill him, basically, to arrest him and kill him. And this man, this lieutenant, takes a male hostage from each village and imprisons them and said he's going to kill them in time if they don't eventually turn over the priest. Well, they don't turn over the priest. This priest has an illegitimate child, a little girl that actually dislikes him. He's an alcoholic. He's dishonest in many ways. But they know that he's for them the conduit from Jesus Christ, from God himself, the conduit of grace through the sacraments, because the church is about the sacraments. A bad man, as bad as this man in Graham Greene's The Power and Glory, bad as this man in Graham Greene's The Power, The Glory, is still a priest who can administer valid sacraments. It had to be that way because we are all bad, fallen, klutzes, messed up people in some way. So from what source can you recruit virtuous priests? Where will you get them? There are virtually no virtuous priests. The sacraments come to us flooding in and penetrating through our clergy's badness. The sacraments come to us flooding in and penetrating through our clergy's badness, just as if it was not there, just as if it was a gossamer membrane easily passed through. Well, it had to be set up that way, because the sacraments are essential, and virtuous priests are rare, maybe even absent. In support of this, I want to read you a short passage from John, the Gospel of John. And you're going to notice that I insert a pregnant pause, and after I finish reading, I'm going to talk about that pause. Start with verse 52. The Jews therefore quarreled among themselves, crying, "How can this man give us his flesh to eat?" Then Jesus said to them, "Most assuredly, I say to you, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in you. Whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life, and I will raise him up at the last day. For my flesh is food indeed, and my blood is drink indeed. He who eats my flesh and drinks my blood abides in me, and I in him. As the living Father sent me, and I live because of the Father, so he who feeds on me will live because of me. This is the bread which came down from heaven. Not as your fathers ate the manna and are dead, he who eats this bread will live forever." These things he said in the synagogue as he taught in Capernaum. Many disciples turned away. Therefore, many of his disciples, when they heard this, said, "This is a hard saying. Who can understand it?" When Jesus knew in himself that his disciples complained about this, he said to them, "Does this offend you? What then if you should see the Son of Man ascend where he was before? It is the Spirit which gives life. The flesh profits nothing. The words I speak to you are spirit, and they are life. But there are some of you who do not believe." For Jesus knew from the beginning who they were who did not believe and who would betray him. And he said, "Therefore I have said to you that no one can come to me unless it has been granted to him by my Father." From that time, many of his disciples went back and walked with him no more. I'm pausing. Then Jesus said to the 12, "Do you also want to go away?" But Simon Peter answered him, "Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life. Also, we have come to believe and know that you are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Jesus answered them, "Did I not choose you, the 12, and one of you is a devil?" He spoke of Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon, for it was he who would betray him, being one of the 12. Did you notice the pause? Of course, I called attention to it. The pause was the silence of Jesus who watched them go and who did not call them back. It's right after the sentence, "From that time, many of his disciples went back and walked with him no more." And what did Jesus say? Nothing. Nothing. He paused. And it was a chilling pause. It should strike fear into your heart. That if you leave, he may not call you back. It's up to you. You have free will. If you leave the church, you're one of those disciples that left. I have a friend who humorously said about these people that went away, the many, many disciples that went away, that Protestants are in the Bible, in their New Testament, they're in John. There they are, the disciples who walked away because they could not accept the reality of the sacrament of the Eucharist. So, my friends, my fellow Catholics, would you leave and deny yourself the Eucharist? Would you deny your child's soul eternal life? To put him in a condition in which there is no life in him because you have abandoned the Eucharist? Is that a greater sin than the one you're objecting to? Who knows? It might be. Think about it. Remember that to endanger our children's lives by indulging ourselves would be worse than wrong. It would be a kind of abuse. To do that to our soul, child, is a kind of spiritual abuse. Sacraments are essential. Yes, sorry about that. I'm afraid so. They're essential. Unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood. Without the Eucharist, you die a spiritual death. Your soul dies. That's what there is no life in you means. Those that leave are cutting themselves off from the sacraments. They're taking the bus described in C.S. Lewis's The Great Divorce, that novel. And you can get on it in heaven and ride to hell. It goes you know where. If you ride it, it will take you down to where you will lock the gate from the inside and keep yourself there. Jesus did not do it. You condemned yourself to hell. In leaving the church, the Catholic Church, these people lay bare the embarrassing truth that they were members of the earthly physical church. They belong to the church that is a club, not the transcendental church, not the real church, not the real authentic church, the body of Christ. Well, I have to confess, I would enjoy blaming this contemporary blindness on the disastrous enlightenment in the 18th century. But this defect is old, far older, ancient as the interfering dust on your windshield every morning. It's old. Even Christ, 2,000 years ago, had to endure these skeptics until they decided to leave. It seems beyond scary. He did not try to stop them. That is beyond scary. So if Jesus didn't try to stop them, what am I doing here in this podcast? Why am I trying to console you, to ask you to consider? Why should I try keeping you from leaving the church?
I might just be annoying you by calling out,
hey, watch your step there. You're stepping into a big hole. Maybe I'm offending you. Now let me make it clear that I condemn the perpetrators of this terrible abuse. I'm not defending them at all. I'm asking you not to add to the scandal by leaving. I'm not excusing or condoning the terrible offenses of some clergy. God will be just with them, but he will also be just with you and your soul after you leave the church. Don't blame anybody else or me. You did it. He warned you. The church is more than they think it is. It has a transcendental dimension that is not canceled by the misbehavior of the clergy. The church is not about the individual. Those who leave are merely making the church more pure by their absence. These people think that the persons who are priests should be sinless. But there are no such people to hire to be priests and to train. The church is simply more than they think it is. Perhaps God would not try to keep them from leaving. He would turn to those of us left behind and say, aren't you going to leave too? Is he looking at me? I would have to say, I'd rather say, no, I'm sticking with the church, your church. Don't give me any credit because there isn't anywhere else to go. There's no place else to go. No, I'm not leaving. Our soul, our beautiful soul, is a gift from God. But our nature has a defect, a mutated, inheritable defect in our DNA, a genetic tendency toward evil. The original sin. We are fallen but must attempt to repair our soul before we return it to God. Given that understanding, are the leavers committing worse sin than the one they object to in others? Not in all cases, I hope. I pray for them.
God will decide. So how did this happen? Is this a uniquely depraved time? Did this cultural mudslide just happen because it was inevitable? Well, the answer here on Setting the Record Straight is no, we were pushed. We were subverted, we were pushed. Keep in mind that our mission here is to uncover history, both positive and negative, that has gotten insufficient attention. There are a lot of truths that people do not want to hear, they're not willing to hear. It's not just that they can't handle the truth. They've been carefully educated not to believe certain truths, that those that speak those truths are radicals, crazies. One of the truths is our culture was subverted. It's been well documented, especially since the 3.5 years that the KGB archives were open to Western investigators, qualified professionals and historians. And we saw the truth in the record. The people at all our institutions, including, yes, the Catholic Church. So we don't lose our way. I'm not diverting to a different course. I'm going to answer a question that too few are asking. How did this sickness of child abuse occur in the Catholic Church and the Catholic clergy? I know the incidence of such abuse among the Catholic clergy is only a very small fraction. One recent estimate was 0.005%. But that's way too much. It is disgracing the church. But there's the cover-up, too. How could this happen in the Catholic Church? Was the Catholic Church always this weak and turning its eyes the other way? Or is this novel? Is this new in history? Well, a very close look at history will show that it is novel. It began in the 40s, maybe the 30s, in this country. The slow digging of sand out from under the cultural foundations of our society. From under the foundation stones of our institutions, from under the monuments of our heroes. What was really occurring in this last century is very carefully and well documented by responsible historians. I have several bookshelves crowded with the volumes written in recent years, revealing the extent and the success of the subversion. Based on the Venona de-encryptions, based on the KGB archives. Very important to know, because the common thread of what was reported to us we were living through during the past 8 or 9 years is actually a misconception, a carefully constructed misconception. The most effective tool of the devil, it is said, is to promote the belief that he does not exist. This is exactly what this very intelligent propaganda did. It created disinformation. And the first and most important step in creating disinformation, the first step, the primary step, the foundational step, is that anybody that would suggest that the church and other cultural institutions had agents within them working to embarrass and disgrace the institutions. Anybody would suggest that. He's radical. He has no basis. But it is those, however, who say that this subversion did not exist that have no historical basis for their opinion. Was the church always the same way? Or is this something new and novel to the degree that it exists now? Well, that seems to be the case. It seems to be a recent phenomenon, as is the cultural breakdown of our society, the shattering, the crumbling of our society and our institutions. They seem to be sounding more and more like the version of ourselves that the KGB wants us to believe. Now, the KGB, as it was, is really no more. Didn't matter. They started a wave, a meme, which is contagious. A meme assumes a life of its own by its very definition. It's contagious. It goes from person to person, from generation to generation. Something that we've come to understand about culture. It's important to realize a principle that most historians do, that cultural memes, attitudes, concepts, view of the world, begin with a cult. The center of the culture is the cult. The center of our culture has been Christendom, and most especially the Catholic Church. And from the cult flows politics, academia, the press, the music, the movies, the art, and especially the music, actually, the most powerful convincer. They managed to create in our culture a youth cult, the invention of the teenager in the 40s, because the communist effort was always to separate the cult of the youth the cult of the adults. If you don't believe me, read up on the Cultural Revolution under Mao Zedong. Read up on Cardinal Manzani. His fight against the communists began with their attempt, and it was successful, to take over the schools, always the schools. In Mexico, under the Calles neo-Marxist government, Calles who protected Trotsky, the first thing he did is take over the schools. That movement is depicted in the movie For Greater Glory. But most especially interesting, I think, is the case of Bella Dodd. Dodd, D-O-D-D, Bella Dodd. Let's talk about that a little bit right now. If you look up Bella Dodd on the internet, you'll find some information, some documentation on what I'm talking about. Look this up on the internet, Bella Dodd, and you'll get some information, some documentation on how this issue of subversion of the various institutions in our culture, and specifically the Catholic clergy, was revealed by Bella Dodd to the U.S. Congress in the 40s. This subversion of our clergy intersects with the current abuse crisis as one of its causes. And if you're interested in more detail on this, listen to the next podcast I do, because I'm going to get into it in some depth with Bella Dodd and her relationship with Bishop Fulton Sheen, who restored her to her Catholic faith after she spent decades as a senior member of the CPUSA, the Communist Party of the USA. That's going to be in the next podcast. Of course, there was subversion earlier by the KGB of the United States. It started between 1910 and 1920. As a matter of fact, Seattle was closed down for a while because of the use of improvised bombs in the downtown area of Seattle by the communists. But the whole propaganda effort didn't go into high gear until after the proliferation of nuclear weapons on both sides in the Cold War. MAD, MAD, Mutually Assured Destruction. Russia decided it was a stalemate and they would have to increase their effort of subversion and propaganda by the dissemination of misinformation. And it went into high gear. There was subversion earlier, of course. There was even a large organization called the Communist Party USA, which one of their missions was to infiltrate the government. Please join me for the next podcast if you're interested at all in hearing some of the uncomfortable truths about the infiltration of the Catholic Church by the Communist Party USA and the Communist Party worldwide. This information goes part of the way to explaining one of the root causes of the present scandal in the United States, and it will point the way forward to prevent it from happening again. On Breadbox Media, this is Chuck Coffin for Setting the Record Straight.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media. Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.